yes, while they are willing to do things themselves, they don't seem very willing to really, really just jump in some direction and really try something.
Do you feel continually let down by modern media? Do you miss the good old days, back when all that mattered was a good story and not some agenda? Do you have ambitions of picking up a pen and pad and fighting the creative war yourself? Then this is the podcast for you. Each week, I'm going to talk to a creator who said enough is enough and started making the content they wished was out there. Join us as we discuss the ups and downs of the self-publishing world. We want to help empower you to join the Iron Age of Media. Welcome to Iron Age Marketing. Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Iron Age Marketing. I am Nikki P here, as always. My guest today is AC Pritchard. How are we doing there, AC?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I get to talk to people who make comics, and that's always fun.
I'd imagine.
So we're having you on today to talk about a book that you're releasing with a friend of ours, Luke Stone. Anything Luke does, I know I'm going to like, so I'm excited about it. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that book and kind of how you two decided to collaborate on this?
Well, the book is called A Saga of Sunsets. It's 72 pages, just fully loaded, full color, defined beginning and end to the story. Like, it's all in one package, like anything you could ask for, you know, just if you, as a lover of stories or fantasy or even history, you know, because there is some like real history influence in there, and I'll get to that. But essentially, the story started off as a prompt. It was inspired by a prompt on ironage.media or Anvil Magazine, whichever you want to look at it, the website. He posts weekly prompts, and there was one that really stuck out to me. I think it was the Zeppelin or the airship or something like that. It was the technical term for like a medieval airship, you know, and I was like, oh, that's cool. And then I brainstormed a way Vikings could do that, you know, actually scientifically. And the answer is fermentation, because you can get hydrogen with that. All you gotta do is separate it. I could go down that rabbit hole too. I figured all that out. But yeah, once I had the concept, I was like, the story ran away with me. Because me and my wife and son recently visited the Kensington Runestone Museum in Alexandria, Minnesota. And they have all the scale models of like the Viking longships and stuff. And it was so fascinating. They got the runestone there. You know, you can see it with your own eyes. It's just a beautiful thing. The story translated and all that. So I looked at the translation of the story, and my imagination started going wild. And the thing wrote itself, right? Yeah, yeah. And since it was the plot kind of wrote itself, I placed it in the same world as my my novel that I have in editing right now, 150,000 word novel. So all the world building was there because of that, you know. And yeah, just fired off a nice 10,000 word short story, published it for free at first, and then yanked it down and included it as part of a short story collection for my Amazon book, which for, you know, for indies out there, I feel compelled to say this because of personal experience. Indies should know that it is free to publish on Amazon, and there's free software. You can do it all for free, right? So you write, you just have a Word document. You get the free software, which Amazon has right there on their website. You can format it all for free, publish it for free, and start earning a little bit of profit one way or another, even if it's slow, right? But this little trickle, I decided I'm not touching it since it's a little trickle. Like, what's a little bit of money here and there from a new author going to do as far as like paying bills and stuff, maybe gas money, a little food, sure, which helps. But I decided to just redirect it all into the book itself because of my experience with my band over a decade in music. You know, I know that it is just good business practice to recirculate profits into a business, if, and that helps it grow. So I did that with my book, and I got the first page of art from Luke Stone. I was like, this is a short story. It actually could be a comic, you know. And I found three different artists. Luke Stone and Mark Hatherley are the two that like stuck. And I, if this succeeds, I could adapt the third story from my Amazon book. But I digress. Found Luke Stone. We hit it off right away. Like, the dude's an awesome guy. I sent him over the script that I adapted myself, you know, more free. If you're a writer, you can write a script too, right? I think a lot of like prose writers are turned off by other forms of writing. Like, oh, I gotta pay somebody to do this or pay somebody to translate that kind of thing. But, you know, if you can write, you can write. And you just a few Google searches, you find everything you need to know. Look up some examples, just emulate the greats. But I digress. I got a couple pages of art, or a few pages, I should say, just off of the initial profits of Amazon, Mortal Descent on Amazon, my book. And with that initial, you know, boost of art, I was able to contact Richard from Anvil Magazine. And because I shopped artists around smart, you know, smart with the artist I chose, he was excited to see a comic from Luke Stone. And he had seen enough from me from, like, you know, he's the guy who did the prompt initially. So he had read the story already and was like, and imagined what that comic would be like from Luke Stone. And it was just, I made a smart decision and shopped the comic around in the right place, and it got it published, which, I mean, once Anvil Magazine picked up the idea, there was enough resources to finance the rest of a 15 page preview. I mean, I admittedly, I did end up, investing a little bit of my own money into it, but that's just to keep up with deadlines, right? I could have agreed to a smaller page count and then just used the exact amount of money that Anvil gave me and made that many pages for my preview. But me and Richard both wanted to see 15 pages of it, so, you know, he got excited, I got excited. But anyway, you take that 15 page preview, you have more than enough to demonstrate to the world, like, what the whole graphic novel might end up looking like, because it's only going to get better from the preview, and that's the starting off point, right? And so once that was established, I was aware of what, like, me and Luke have here, and I'm like, you know, instead of just doing one issue at a time, let's just do the whole thing. It's a finished story. Why dwell on this for so long, right? Like, let's just get the full graphic novel. Let's go. You know, and this will be my first official comic holding it in my hands, right? I count Anvil Magazine to an extent, but that's a different publication, and it's a magazine, right?
You kind of touched on it a little bit there. Your background obviously has swung from a few different things in your time. So this idea of, like, migrating from, you know, prose to comics doesn't strike me as being, like, out of left field for you, because, you know, you're a writer now, but you've been a musician, or are still a musician. Like, you've just done things. Why don't you give us a little bit more background on you to kind of set the place for all this?
Oh yeah. Sorry. Well, I've always been writing, you know, ever since playing tabletop games with my friends in, like, high school, middle school, you know, from there. And, the first one I ever played was Lord of the Rings ripoff D&D. It was Lord of the Rings, not D&D. It was just Lord of the Rings role-playing, right? And that got my first taste of, like, how that all worked, because it's like a familiar setting, you know, I can understand this, and you get it down. But, like, I remember going home that night from my friend's house, and like, stories were just going through my head, and I'm like, wow, that's crazy. And you combine that with things like video games, movies, and then specifically at the time, because technology wasn't exactly there yet on the internet, there was a big, like, popularity of, like, text-based online browser games. You go to, like, a website, and it's nothing but text. It just describes like what's going on, but you could like log in daily and like attack your friend's castle and like get new fortifications and stuff. But the whole thing just cultivated my imagination like pretty strongly. And so like you combine the role-playing games, video games, and like those like text-based things, my imagination ran wild. I started writing. From there, like took classes in high school that seriously, like creative writing and English, and got a job at the local newspaper as a columnist reviewing movies. I even had a press pass and everything. Like I could just walk into the movie theater, show them my press pass, and they were like, "Oh, hey, Andy," you know, and I could sit there and watch 3-4 movies in a row and review them all. But yeah, from there, I, after high school, went into music for like a decade. That's all indie, you know. I didn't realize how much like technical indie experience I had until coming into the Iron Age and really analyzing and kind of like trying this again, you know.
I don't find it without like some amusement that most of the guys that I know in the Iron Age all spent at least as much time as I did in music before we found our way here. The other thing I find is that a lot of them are people that have spent a lot of time in libertarian circles.
That's the closest thing I could get behind as libertarians, to be honest. So,
like lots of libertarian musicians and stuff like that, which is entertaining also because I don't usually think of libertarian musicians as being good creators, but the ones I find here tend to be better than others. So
I'll take that as a compliment. I think there was like a little compliment there tucked in.
A shout out to JVP Music, since he was actually one of my first, like when I used to have a libertarian music podcast, he was one of my first people I talked to, like many, many years ago. And all of a sudden I get into this Iron Age thing, like, don't I know you from somewhere else?
He's awesome, man. I might be doing something with him coming up. Shout out to JVP. He's the dude.
Well, the thing I always, the reason I think a lot of so much of that is because of the nature of the business, certainly people that have anything resembling a punk rock ethos, DIY is the thing. Like you learn how to do, because if you want to keep the stuff personal and keep it what you want it to be artistically, you have to do it yourself. It's the only way you're going to make it.
I got thoughts on this. So yeah, like I said, decade in music, met my wife. She's like, you should keep making music. I was like, I'm going to write instead, because I always wanted to. Started writing, publishing. Here we are now. I'm at the comic book phase. Now to my point, that was just to catch up any listeners. Nikki, I'm sure you saw this in your music experience. Who were the most successful bands? Like the ones where it's just like they were forged. You heard about them and suddenly they're famous and touring and oh my goodness, they're so far above everybody else, like boom, just boom, overnight success. It's the ones who did it themselves. Like I'm going to just like, I have an example. Volumes, the metal band Volumes. They don't even have like the super best crazy quality, like in their first album, but because everyone in the band could do it themselves, it just like the record label's like, oh, you just want us to put our name on it, and you literally got everything else covered because they established how many shows they could go to, you know, how consistent they sounded live, that they could record their own albums, stuff like that. And it basically, that's what it came down to, is the record label's looking at it like, oh, all we have to do is put our name on this. How do we not sign that, right?
I mean, for me, when I think of like the true DIY, will find a way to make it happen. And the band that strikes me now, it's Polyphia. Like Tim did everything he possibly could to will that band into existence, essentially. Like that kid's story is just wild to follow.
So wait, that's all DIY. I'd imagine they had a label by now.
I mean, the thing is that we'll say musical direction. The reason the band exists the way they do is because Tim was unhappy with like the state of metal music and like the fact that nobody gives a shit about metal anymore. If he wanted to be a famous musician, he's going to have to make some changes. So he literally up and went, left for LA, spent time with like the hot producers and like what was working in music. Like, hey, I want to be a working musician. So how do I make that happen? What do I need to do? You know, and then goes back, you know, with the neck tattoos and all of the fashion.
Your appearance. Like, okay, rule number one, your appearance.
There yeah.
You go. And then we'll get to the music, you know. Like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but understanding the market is important. Like, as my daughter would call him, the cute anime guy. Because that's how she thinks of Tim. He's the cute anime guy.
He is. I think he's the cute anime guy. He's adorable as hell. I was like, "What's this? Why does this guy look straight up like he was ripped out of a page of Death Note? This is a Death Note character playing guitar. What the fuck?"
Absolutely. I hate. He's so damn good. But you know, Tiger Moms will do that to you. You know.
I love it. I find myself just like robot, play Polyphia. You know, it's just okay. You know, I just get in those moods.
For me, I always think is if you don't do it for yourself, you're not going to stick it out. And the people who stick it out are the ones that, you know, find the shortcuts. Eventually, like if you suck and a label's dealing with it, they're going to cut you off. And if you don't find a way to monetize it for yourself or to make it cheap enough for yourself that it doesn't matter, you're going to give up. Like, and the only the people that are successful, the ones that do it until they are good. The very least, like you do anything for 20 years, eventually you're going to get good enough to wait out the competition, I guess.
Right. And you just touched on another good point is cost of production and just like lowering that. Right. Cause that ultimately gives you room to play with, like, cause you could keep the same budget, but the lower you get the cost of production, maintaining the same level of quality best you can, you have more of that budget that you can allocate towards things like, you know, really good videos or whatever you need at the time. Like you kickstarting that merch store or whatever, you know, whatever the case is. Yeah, but it's a tricky thing out there, man. Like bands, you gotta, even with merch, man, like it's really, you're not really trying to profit off the shirts. You're just trying to get people to wear them, you know? Yeah.
It's awareness. You're trying to build, like, you want your name out there is the big thing. I mean, and, you know, cost cutting. I was just talking to someone the other day. Like, I remember how we used to do shirts. Like, someone was talking about, like, how much they paid for stuff. Like, you know, when I was in a band, we used to just go to Mark's or whatever the cheap, irregular stuff. Place was, I don't know, Value City or something, and buy a bunch of plain shirts off the rack. And then if you're really, really poor as a guy, you go and make a stencil and then you spray paint the logo. And if you're a little bit more money than that, you go and you photocopy the stencil to make a screen print out of it, and then you screen print it. You know, hardly costs a thing to do it.
I remember finding deals at Walmart where it was like X amount of like red tanks for like however many dollars a piece. And I'm like, oh, holy shit. That's like $10 cheaper than every website, because tanks are expensive. Actually, like you'd think the more material, like a hoodie, like, oh, that makes sense. There's more material. No, tanks are like the second most expensive thing because they have to cut it out in a specific way. So there's less material, but it's more expensive. But yeah, we go into Walmart and get like a pack of those for like not very much. And then like do what we had to do, figure, you know, bring that elsewhere, you know, because I think we had some friends that were dabbling with like, you know, their own little cheap printer. We're like, yeah, dude, that takes me back.
Well, and you know, the crossover here is like, you do the crossover better. You sent me what you call a press kit, and I'm just laughing my ass off because that brought me all the way back to the band sinks. And it's like, you know, I've been telling people for a long time that what's really going on now is nothing new within the comic book, fiction, whatever industry, because music dealt with all this 20 years ago. Like Napster, what it did to the music industry is just finally now happening to the publishing world. And so is it going to be the guys that learned the lessons from what happened 20 years ago in music that have the tools and the skill set to manage what's coming in the publishing industry?
Holy shit. You just, I mean, nobody, I haven't heard anybody mention Napster and compare it to the, like the new Iron Age thing that's going on. You know what I mean? Cause like, that's kind of how I view it is like, that's what like the Iron Age is. It's like independence, right? It's a decentralization. Not anything else. It's like a grand decentralization, which is kind of what Napster was. Like it was, the music was released. It's just, there it is. You know what I mean? And the tools to, I mentioned all the free software earlier and Amazon and stuff. The tools are there. And I mean, as much as people want to gripe about it, the art is there now too. I mean, the goal is human art, but you can start somewhere for free and start investing in yourself because investing in yourself is forever, right? So that's, I mean, yeah. Tattoos. It's yeah. Forever, you know? So, yeah, brother. Yeah.
About yeah. It. So. Well, I mean, not to, I'm going to have to do an episode on AI art at some point just because I'm one of these charlatans. It's like, no, it's a net positive. So it's just going to make the art that real artists do more valuable because it's boutique. Like to me, a lot of what the Iron Age is it's like, okay, we're taking it from like the mass market to the boutique industry. You know, all those guys that like complained about selling, you know, oh, we can't sell CDs anymore. Even though I still personally buy CDs.
I do too.
They're all making a killing on vinyl.
Yeah. Vinyls are expensive to print too. Like $40 a pop, man. It's crazy.
They're making their money on those because, you know, the people that really care are the ones that want the extras. You know, I still buy DVDs because I fucking love the commentary. I love the digital commentary. Like the Venture Brothers TV show, I don't think I'd love it as much if it wasn't for all those commentaries, you know? Like those two dudes sitting there talking about their show and how much they love those characters was infectious. Like, and if the show wasn't enough for me, listening to them talk about their show was enough for me to like be a fan for life.
It's like a companion podcast. Like while you watch it. Yeah. And it's half the reason why people like the Lord of the Rings extended editions. You think it's just the content? Like, yeah, cool. We've seen Aragorn swing a sword for 3 movies. Like we've seen plenty of orcs die. It's the extra, the appendices.
Having, you know, kind of talked a little bit about that. What are the things, I guess, that you see that maybe people that are trying and struggling within the community, what are the things you think they're fucking up on? If you don't mind me asking. As someone who's done the DIY thing for so long, has learned the lessons, and is, you know, trying to take those lessons and apply them. Like, I'll be honest, in the same vein, the reason I fell into podcasting and doing this is because I'd failed so hard as a musician, like not being able to do all the things I wanted by not learning the marketing, not learning a lot of those other stuff. I learned how to record music, but I never learned how to get people who weren't musicians to give a shit.
Yeah, man. I kind of reached that point too.
And I think the irony just struggles from that right now where so many people that are involved are the creators themselves and they're not focusing their attentions towards the fans, towards bringing people with an interest in the art.
Yeah, I have a few thoughts on that. So I think everybody like messes up in their own way, including myself, you know, even with that press kit, I'm sure I messed that up in some way that I am overlooking, you know, yeah, that's kind of where I'm at. I'm like, this is a functional thing anyway, but yeah, there it is, you know? But yeah, I would say, you know, stuff like that, little things, everybody gets caught up in like, okay, here's my 7th book, which is nice. I can't really knock going wide, too much because every book that you put out is forever and that's done and in the books, so to speak. So in theory, they could come back to that and then like do the audiobook later, right? And while they're working on book 12 or whatever. But
Well, and if you're not a known commodity anyways, there's always the, oh, I'm just going to slow, sneakily re-release this on a new date, you know? And say, oh, it's a new book. I don't know what you're talking about. Pretend none of that ever happened beforehand. There's things you can do.
And I fresh cone of paint, you know, like it's like one of your first books. Maybe your cover's really poopy at that point. You know, yank it down, get a new cover, read through it again.
Well, yeah, maybe you started that first one with, you know, the AI thing that you could afford at the time. And you spent some time in the industry. You make some friends in the artist community, and now you can actually afford someone to build a good cover for you and like make it nice and something that's going to help you build word of mouth around that.
Like, I'm telling you, man, Luke Stone is in serious danger of just being my like permanent, like undyingly loyal artist. Like I support that guy so much. He's very nice. Like, in fact, anybody that you will really see me interact with lately, because I haven't really delved into too many, like, you know, I haven't gotten like a big spot on like a crazy huge, like, I don't even know the celebrity person kind of podcast, like Friday Night Tights or something. I haven't gotten any opportunities like that. So it's just like, you know.
Well, you're not talking about Star Wars, The Acolyte. So they're not, they understand their audience. Unfortunately, like, no name artists aren't what their audience is, sadly. I can't knock anybody for understanding their market.
Yep. And I, to be fair, I haven't shot my shot, but yeah, I doubt it, you know. it's whatever, and I don't hold it against anybody, but like, yeah, Luke is like just super nice guy. Everybody's super nice. And
well, more than him being a nice guy, he's a super motivated guy. Like, nice is awesome. There's I know too many people that like they have visions of doing stuff, and then it's after 10, 12 years, it's still just a vision of doing stuff, and then stuff doesn't exist. You know, another thing I do find with musicians that they tend to find ways to make things happen. Like, very few of them kind of hang back. It's like, okay. And which is funny because it's actually a harder prospect in a lot of ways. Like, recording music takes money or a bunch of learning how to do shit. Like, you can't just like hop in Word document and start it, you know?
And that's it right there. That's kind of like, that's it. That's to answer your question. Like, what do you think people are messing up? Like, yes, while they are willing to do things themselves, they don't seem very willing to really, really just jump in some direction. And really try something like I had no idea how to do like design work and stuff. I remember when I was making my map for my novel, it was strictly for functional reasons. I didn't really even like, I told myself, I was like, if I ever sell this, I'll probably have somebody else remake it in a better way. But the map actually turned out pretty decent. And like, that's the level I was at. I was like following a tutorial on YouTube and like, you know, doing tricks, but it turned out right. And then now here I'm at, like, on my computer right here, I'm working on a book cover where I'm literally hand painting like a helmet onto a, you know, onto another character. And it's like, I've come so far and I don't even realize it sometimes, you know, and people need to just be willing to jump into the fire. And I don't even mean in like a public way. I mean, in a personal way. Like, look yourself in the mirror and really, you know, call your own bluff and like go give it a shot, I guess, and tinker around. You just gotta.
Well, I'll see people argue with Kyle, you know, draw and talk Kyle, and people will bitch like, oh, I'm doing everything. I'm working so hard to get my books out there. And then he'll do that. Well, but are you really? And I'm kind of with him on the. But are you really? Like, see, you make one Twitter post a day or something promoting your art. Anyone who knows social media is going to tell me, well, if you didn't post that same thing three times, nobody saw it. Because that's the way the algorithms work. Like, unless you've got a plan where you're doing that literally every day of the week at different times, learning when your audience is available. And unless you've done, like, perhaps the psychographic research to know who your audience is, you're wasting your time. Like, you know, so many people think, oh, well, I'm on here and they'll just come. It's like, well, No. The whole idea behind all of this is, it's, I'll say it every episode until everyone gets it and follows along. It's all about relationships. And I know that most of us are kind of like nerdy homebody types that, you know, like the people close to us and aren't necessarily excited to make a whole bunch of new friends. But the bottom line is that those friendships, those are relationships, those are what are going to help you get to the next person. They're the starting line, which is what the tight-knit community of the Iron Age is good for. It's the people that are going to help us get to the people that we really want to get to, as long as we're honest with ourselves and what we're trying to do and the people in our lives are for.
Right. Actually, this is super relevant with some things me and my co-hosts for my podcast, The Iron Seas, have been talking about recently. We've been discussing this idea of like teamwork mentality. Like, I posted this afternoon just a little meme, you know, of a couple of cats. They somehow, like, it's hilarious. Like, it's a stork carrying baby kittens. The next frame is some cats looking up. Yeah. And then the final frame is somehow they got the stork and saved the baby kittens and they all ate the stork. So it's like I said, work together. You know, the reason I said work together is because, like, this is a relevant thing lately. Like, a lot of people are so quick to, like, I don't know what it is. It's like a scarcity mentality or what. They think that something like your ratio of followers to following on Twitter matters. It matters if you like something. It matters if you click that retweet button or interact in some way. You know, like, there's this perception of all these things that they think matter. But what only thing that does matter is relationships, like you said, because, like, I will shamelessly follow people back. Like, okay, all you got to do is demonstrate to me that you're not a bot. And like, maybe half a step further, like, you simply like comics or fantasy. Like, boom, you got my follow back, you know?
You know how you get a follow from me? Mention Iron Age anywhere. Or mention RPGs, fantasy, and sci-fi, and don't have pronouns in your bio, and I will add you. That's it. That's all it takes. Because for me, I care about what the people that are, and granted, I approach this as a business for me because I want to help people market their stuff. So that anyone who wants to do that, I'm willing to help. And the only way I'm going to find those people is to engage with people that are telling me that that's what they want to do. And maybe they don't follow me necessarily, but, you know, that still gives me a window where I can engage with them. Like, if they say something I think's interesting or stupid, I can jump in.
You're connected. Your account is connected to theirs in some way, even if you don't necessarily see all their stuff. Because this attitude will lead to you following a lot of people, but that's what things like lists are for. You just, the amount that it actually does matter and the people that it matters to is so insignificant, because you could easily get that same spot. Like I mentioned, Friday Night Tights, you could get that same spot on Friday Night Tights or even Rogan with a completely balanced ratio. You got 100,000 followers or something, because all that matters is that, and you're following 100,000, doesn't matter, because all that matters is like what work you're putting out at the end of the day. You think, like, if Mike Tyson was following just as many people that follow him, millions, it wouldn't mean that he's not Mike Tyson anymore. You know what I mean? So you just got to be undeniable.
I mean, for me, I'm showing that I'm interested in things. That's what I'm doing. Like, I click on things. I want to know what people are doing. And if they're not interested in me, then that's their loss, you know, by all means, move along. And the thing is, and this is, we'll get along with people not lying to themselves, is understanding. This is where that scarcity mindset really bothers me, is that, like, people think that everybody's competition. And I guess in some basic way where, yeah, we only have so many hours in a day, people are competition. But, you know, people who make superhero comics, you're kind of wasting your time on me. I don't like superheroes. You're probably not going to sell them to me. Now, you throw H.P. Lovecraft monsters in there, and I'm totally going to be interested in what you're doing. Like, ripped up bodies, and that's my thing.
That's when you get the Superman artist that, like, just makes the Superman Lovecraft. And, I mean, guess what? That sounds badass, bro. Yeah, he sold me on it. So
I've never heard of this, but I'm suddenly interested. So.
He fights Cthulhu, punches Cthulhu in the face. Let's go. Okay, I can get behind that.
But unless you're paying attention to your audience, if you're just trying to like blanketly sell comics to people who like comics, that is such a broad like concept at this point. Like, I guarantee you, like, there's a bunch of girls with Marvel in their profile, and all the reason that's there is because, oh, they like Chris Hemsworth, and he takes his shirt off, and that's the extent of their fandom. Yeah,
right. Or like Marvel told them, or like Disney told them that they should, you know, that this is a political issue and they should care, or they should be upset or something.
You know, so you can have 100,000 people following you that are going to risk, oh, because this OC does comic books, and they're waiting for you to show them Chris Hemsworth with his shirt off. But that's not what you're there for. You're there to show them something very different.
We're trying to see a story about Thor. That's what we want. That's what we want. But yeah, and I've heard people call those types tourists, you know? Yeah. I mean, God bless you. We appreciate you for loving things. But there's a line. I don't know. There's a line where you should just not say anything, or like maybe react less emotionally.
Well, the tough thing is because, you know, as a geek, we all want people to come into the community and be a part of the community and engage in the community. But, you know, as with any community, there's a certain degree of paying your dues before you get to be the one in the pulpit, you know, before you're the one directing where that art's going to go. And a lot of the problem with the past 10, 15 years, certainly, is that people that didn't pay their dues the way the fans want them to have paid their dues, certainly, started dictating where they think things are supposed to go. And, you know, they may or may not have put themselves out of work, but...
Not good. Billions of dollars. So, yeah, it's like you could get 100,000 tourists, right? And you could probably, like, you'll get probably hundreds or thousands of people that will stick around and no longer be tourists and actually go and, like, dissect all the lore and fall in love with it and buy all the stuff. But, yeah, it does suck when, you know, somebody is just like, oh, I love this. I'm all about this. This is my identity. I will never buy a comic book, or I will never, you know, do this other thing. This other thing's cool this week. They forget about the other thing, but claim that they still love it. But,
you know, perhaps understanding even that own cycle within your own art, you know, because there might be, like, I know, like, someone like Daniel P. Riley, he does a lot of different things with his books, you know, and understanding that everything isn't necessarily going to map from one thing to the next. You know, if he writes superhero stories, and then he writes, you know, the G-Sidai stuff where it's dudes with, you know, cybernetics and swords hacking each other up, and they're not the same book.
John Wick with samurai swords. That's sick.
But you can't take that personally, like when someone doesn't just love your stuff because your name's on it.
I have a great example of this from a big name, from Disney themselves, actually. The team that worked on Treasure Planet, that's their love child. They wanted to do that all through the 80s. These are the dudes that worked on Black Cauldron and like some of the really classic ones. It all culminated to this moment where Disney was finally like, okay, guys, you can do what you want. We'll let you do what you want. And they're like, Treasure Planet. And they made it. But even that thing that they really, really loved, this was the movie that they cared about the most. Like, think about it. You're retelling Treasure Planet or Treasure Island. Like, that's a strong cultural, like, even a historical thing. You know what I mean? And you're retelling it in this cool way that you get to, like, tastefully imbue your own ideas into. That's actually a good example of a remake done right that Disney has yet to live up to, but I digress.
A lot of that movie is the time in which it came out. Like, it was buried by a lot of other stuff, sadly.
That was my point. It failed. Yeah, yeah. Disney, at the end of the day, the overlords at Disney still effed it up and managed to tank it, because like the trailer for there's a whole map of the of what happened to it, you know. But like the bullet points are like, yeah, they put the trailer out at the wrong time. It was up against other really big movies. The trailer that they did put out revealed the entire plot. Like, there's the plot reveal. Like, the robot in the movie is like, it's a solution on the island at the end of the movie, and they show it in the trailer and like basically explain all the characters. They show that the father figure is actually the bad guy. Like, they reveal all that in the trailer, so nobody needed to see it, you know.
Well, and the circumstances of understanding your world, like in my book that I'm working on, The Role Player's Guide to Marketing, chapter one is specifically on the campaign setting, which is understanding our world as it is and like what you're trying to do battle for your work in. And as another example of this, like Treasure Planet being one of them, have you ever seen the movie The Watch?
It sounds familiar. I don't think I've seen it.
It honestly, it is a very, very funny Cops? Movie that they're That's neighborhood right. watch yes. people. Yeah. And it's a silly, silly movie. Very good cast. And the problem with that movie is that the week it was supposed to come out was the week Trayvon Martin was killed by a neighborhood watch guy. And then the studio says, we can't release this movie. And then when the time comes around that like they thought maybe we could get away with it, the trailers, you know, gives you no idea what the hell the movie's about. And like it doesn't live up to there's no way it could catch what was actually done, because it was done as an afterthought, as opposed to, you know, we had 6 months of buildup or 2 years of buildup to putting this thing out. Gets fucked up at the ninth yard, and then we have to try something new, and it's never as well thought out or well constructed as the original thing. And so what is ostensibly a very funny movie lives in obscurity because of some freak thing that happened in the world around them.
Yeah, I needed to be reminded of it. I'm like, what?
How many, you know, and how many bands released, how were supposed to release albums the week of September 11th, 2001, that like those albums didn't come out till 2 or 3 years later. And by the time they come out, like the musical zeitgeist has changed and like what they did is almost irrelevant anymore.
That's why when that stuff happens, you just got to pull the trigger. Cause you know what, how many articles can you write now talking about it? Like, yeah, we think it's crazy too. We didn't expect this crazy event to happen. Like, dissect your own movie. If you look in this scene right here, it looks a little insensitive, but that's because we didn't know that this freaking event was going to happen.
Suck up that SEO, right?
Yeah, like, just talk about it. Like, people will really respect that, actually. It comes off really honest, and just embrace it. Like, you didn't know. What crime are you guilty of if you make a movie about suicide bombers and then 9/11 happens? Like, you weren't even thinking about anything like that when with the original idea or whatever. It's not your fault. Like, this event happens, the City Watch guy gets taken out or whatever. Just release it. Cause you know what? It's more relevant now. Actually, that's a really morbid marketing thing that was kind of just handed to you, unfortunately. But
well, the first rule of marketing is enter the conversation people are already having in their heads. Like, that's, it's hard to break into people's thoughts. So if you can do that, by all means, do that.
Bro, so like now look at the watch. Look at the watch release, right? They shot themselves in the foot. What are you doing? You didn't do anything wrong. You made a movie that's funny, actually. You're trying to spread joy. Maybe people should watch a City Watch movie that's funny after that. Just saying.
Well, what's funny is it was an alien. It's an alien movie. It's like, other than the fact that they're neighborhood watch dudes chasing aliens, like... It may have been the salve in that moment of, you know, despair culturally that people were dealing with. You know, well, neighborhood watch guys aren't all bad guys. Maybe there's aliens out there. I don't know. In some way, like,
let's think about aliens. Like, yeah, life is crazy. Yeah,
exactly.
But you know? that could have been somebody's love child too. So that's like more to the point, right? Like Treasure Planet, The Watch. Like, even when you really care about something and you love it a lot, it actually, a lot of times those don't really succeed. In fact, there's a certain point, like who's the Michael Bay? Is he the explosion guy? He did,
Michael Bay is the explosion guy. Yes.
He did Avatar, right? He cared a lot about, he did something. Somebody, whoever did Avatar, he was writing that since like 1990. Right? He was writing the Avatar movie for that long. He cares about it a lot. And like, for as big as it was, yeah, it was big. It wasn't at the same time.
No, Avatar is, what's his name? Terminator guy.
That's
not Michael Bay. Not Michael Bay. It's
Titanic guy.
He's gonna kill him. Yes, and I. Only reason I he is really involved in esoteric stuff. Going to get into weird Hollywood,
They're
ruling society kind of discussions.
Eyes wide shut.
Type shit. Sure.
Yeah.
His wife did some really interesting movies too that all fit strangely into. We're leading the American public in a certain way, kind of ways.
Yeah, like some Jackie Chan side work stuff.
Before we get too far off the beaten path here, I'll have weird esoteric Hollywood conversations all day. You're interested, go look up the Road to Hell Films podcast, and I'll talk all about it there. But let's going to wrap up with you telling people where they can go to find this book about orc Vikings. And, you know, where can they go to find this thing?
You can go to fundmycomic.com/ASOS. Think of like a message in a bottle. Think boats. Think Viking boats. Think Vikings. SOS. I'm thinking about doing a trailer with that and just like eating the copyright flag because it would be worth it just to, have that fade in.
Absolutely. Yeah,
let's do it. When you need me, darling, get me. Yeah, super easy link. Just SOS, ASOS. It's collaboration with Luke Stone Studios, who's a champion of indie. He's a strong indie advocate. Same with Anvil. He founded Fund My Comic. Yeah, like need I say more? He's giving tools to indies to do this, and same with Richard from Anvil Magazine. You know, I'm in a close collaboration with him too with this. Like,
as of the time of this recording, we watched his last night on the show on Friday. It was
bittersweet.
It's a bittersweet moment. I like Everly, but it was always nice to know I could see those three there every Friday.
They pulled a fast one over the Iron Seas too, poaching Evely off of us. That's all right. We love it. We love to see it, dude. I literally reacted when I saw that reveal. I was like, "What?" I was freaking out, dude. Yeah, it was awesome.
Nice. And it's that podcast. That's you, Evely, and isn't Bat Sauce involved with that?
And Ultimate Kahuna, Christian Magrum. Yeah. Another YouTuber. We do that every Tuesday. Fun stuff. But
Tuesday, what time?
8:30 p.m. Central, roughly. So, yeah, that's rotating channels. Yeah,
so 9:30 for me.
Rotating channels, so you got to find the link from one of us. We usually all share it out. So
I've wanted to get into the streaming thing, but you guys have all the nights like mapped out already, and it's like I'll just stick to making damn videos.
I'm not about to step on anybody's toes, man. Once I realize there's like common places people go on certain days, it's like, okay, it's part of that collaboration thing we were talking about earlier. It is no sweat off. It's no skin off my teeth to just pick a different day. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it gives me an excuse to not have to learn something new in streaming.
It's something.
We'll take the few excuses not to learn something new, I guess. So right on, AC. Thank you so much for coming on today and having this discussion. I think we've got a lot for people to learn here and to help make them, better creators, more likely to get seen in what is a very, very, even as small as the group is, it's a very, jam-packed. It's a very, full market.
Yeah. I appreciate for having me on too, brother. Like, really, I appreciate that. And the compliments on them.
No, I'd love to have you. I mean, anytime. I'm especially looking to get more into like the deep dives into more of the marketing stuff moving forward, because it's like, I know I've walked this line between, trying to show people the creators that are out there making stuff and trying to educate the creators. But the bottom line is I kind of enjoy educating the creators more because I think that they'll do more from learning the skills that we teach them to build their own audiences than me trying to bring in an audience for them, frankly.
Affecting culture big time with education. One of the first things that these major labels did back in the day when they signed new artists is like, no matter how good the vocalist was, they would kidnap the vocalist for like at like one summer or both the vocalists or whatever, anybody who's going to be doing vocals, and tuck them away in this one specific person's like cabin, out in the, like fly them out somewhere to this other person's cabin. And this person is like a master vocal coach or something. And they come back with different vocals and just like changed. Like,
well, you know, a lot of these guys are teenage kids that like, they have an idea and they don't know how to control it. And it's like, God, you know, when you have someone who can teach you how to control your voice, like that's a very strong, strong thing.
How many of those, now think about that vocal coach, brother. You have a major label that every single band they signed, they send these, you know, vocalists to you. How many world famous people did that person teach? That's ripples you can't even imagine with that, you know.
And kind of to go along with this, never like think of, I hate the word sellout, and I hate like the idea of like being a small part in things. I'm sure you know who Josh Fries is as a musician. Josh Fries is the drummer for the shitty punk band The Vandals. Now, I love the shitty punk band The Vandals. But Josh is also the drummer on every major label record for like the past 20, 30 years. Like from Kelly Clarkson to, you know, he's played with Kelly Clarkson to A Perfect Circle. He also has toured with Guns N' Roses, like every band on the planet. Weezer, he did a tour with, because he's the go-to guy. Everyone knows he's good to work with and he has a good product. You know, you could look at Dave Fridman, who's known as being the producer for the Flaming Lips records. He has a very unique style. But he's also one of the guys that the label Warner Brothers just sends people to because they know that he is going to get the best product out of people. He's the guy. Now, most people don't necessarily know who Dave Fridman is, but Dave Fridman's made a nice career out of being the answer to a problem for a lot of people. And so that's what people need, you know, creatively people need to think about is how can I be the answer to somebody else's problem?
That's such a good way to put it too. And I guess the last thing I'd leave, okay, well, for starters, like, and imagine when you have a product like Katy Perry, like I'll just refer to her as a product. You've invested all this into this brand, which is Katy Perry, right? Yeah, she had music when you picked her up, you know, she's been at Warped Tour or whatever, but to ensure that quality and to guarantee that climb to virality that you're looking for to get the sales or whatever, you're going to send her to everybody and you're going to make sure that she has like the famous drummer that you mentioned or whatever. Like, cause if you write music with that guy, well now you have like one of the best beats and tempos and like structures available, you know? So.
And I'm thinking, you got me thinking Katy Perry was like,
I know, in Warped Tour. Yeah. But yeah, that, I agree. That's an era of being undeniable. And that's what I was going to say that I was going to leave people with here is like, invest in yourself, be undeniable. Don't be afraid to learn, challenge yourself, look in the mirror. And when find that area that like, if it's not impossible, like for me, I'm feeling some resistance with my art in like my penciling and my inks. Because that's where a lot of the raw talent is with artists is actually in the drawing process. Like, yeah, coloring is good, but I seem to understand shading and painting enough to build that up over time. It's something about the sketching that has me feeling like it's almost impossible. But these almost impossible tasks, if you really understand that you can't fly, like you're not a bird, you're just not going to fly, then yeah, then find like the best sources available for you. But don't be afraid to invest in yourself at the same time. Like, cause like, yeah, it would be a waste of time to just sit there and try to fly constantly if you're never going to fly. Right. That's a fact. Like some wimp.
Yeah. You ain't got wings. You should probably give it up, bro.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like for some reason I can do rudimentary sketches and stuff, but like, it's just not, I just feel like it's not there. There's a reason I didn't continue this with high school, but I can still color and do
don't ever
art.
Disrespect what collaboration brings to the table as far as building exactly. the audience goes.
You still need the relationships. Yeah, that's what I was getting at. Yeah, yeah.
Well, and that's one of the things I've always envied rappers for, is that like they'll have a 12-track album and they've got a feature on every track on the album. And so every one of those guys is out there helping push the record because, oh, you got to hear me on this track, on this record. Like it's just building up an ecosystem where everyone has to help everyone because everyone's involved.
Yourself is the key things that I will say. It is also the third corner to that Trinity or the pyramid or whatever you want to call it is the relationships, because any given human being can't do everything. Like even the prodigies, they literally can't do everything. So like, just be pragmatic with yourself. The attainable things, don't be afraid to learn and dabble, work at it. And over time, you'll be able to save at least time when you're dealing with professionals. Cause like, you know, in a lot of the major movies, sometimes the director can just do a rough sketch. Like I know, a good example, Razor Fist can actually kind of draw, but he still got like an artist because he had a vision in mind. But imagine that during the creation process, he can actually kind of rudimentarily draw out the scene to explain everything better because he has that. So like, even though he's not using it at the end of the day, because he's invested in himself, he's able to be more undeniable in his collaboration. And it's that three-way, you can just keep bouncing yourself, others, you know, undeniability.
Right on. Well, once again, boss, thank you so much for coming on today. For all you people listening out there, I really hope that you learn something valuable and take your own creative endeavor to the next level. Do you fancy yourself the next Tolkien, Lewis, or Barker? Maybe you just have something subversive to say. Hopefully this podcast is helping you. But maybe your ambitions are just a little bigger than you can handle on your own. Head over to ironeedsmarketing.com and let Nikki P. help ensure your book doesn't release to nobody.